Good morning. I greet each one of you in Jesus' name. And yes, for all those that Jason named, welcome. It's good to have you back, Marvin. I think I still know who you are. And also the Jonathan Martin family, welcome. It's good to have you here. Maybe you brought the grandson with you to church this morning for the first time, too. I don't know. So anyway. Okay. How many of you are living, how many of your life is the dream you dreamed it would be as a child? Your life turning out your dream? I guess if there's anybody here that's living their dream, they're scared to stick their hand up, that's fine. Probably for most of us, it ends up a little different. Maybe some things do happen, maybe many other things do not happen. I'd like to speak of a person this morning that I would guess, by all the indications, about got as far from living their dream, if they had a dream as a child, from what anybody ever could have. In thinking of what the goals were for people at that time, this was a lady. She certainly did not fulfill the goal that most women would have had at that time, and probably where she lived wasn't exactly where she had planned on living either. I'd like for you to try to figure out who I'm talking about without me telling you. So rather than having you just say the name once you know, would you raise your hand once you think you know who I'm talking about? And once we're about halfway there, we'll see how long it takes you to catch on. So I'll try to be clear between what I actually know and what I think I know on a few of these. So her name, this is some things I do know. Her name meant to be superior or dominant, or to dominate. So superior, dominant was the meaning of her name. She was born and raised in the place to be for her time. If you wanted somebody to, I guess, a little bit like an American passport today. If you wanted to have a good passport, you came from the area that she grew up in. She was of outstanding beauty. I had to think of what one young fellow said when he was describing his girlfriend to his wife, or not to his, yeah, excuse me there, his mom. He said she was drop-dead gorgeous, so maybe she was that way, this lady. Anybody know who I'm talking about yet? Okay, I'm going to throw a possible in there. It seems that possibly, and this I can't prove 100%, that possibly her nickname meant observant. And also possibly her sister married her husband's brother, if that helps you. And like I said, she was born and grew up in the place, a superior place, I guess. But she moved to the wilder west as she got older. Anybody know who I'm talking about yet? I think so. Okay, let's throw a few more. She spent time in two different kings' courts as a potential wife for both of these kings, but she never was a wife to either. She had a personal servant, and she did not treat the servant well. A couple more. Let's see if we can get a few more. Still not sure. Okay. She changed her name in her old age. 89 years old, she got a different name. Let's see, what else should I tell you? Those of you can put your hands down. There's those of you that know, you can factor in the rest now. Those of you that still don't know, I'll keep going. She is the oldest recorded birth mother. Now, I want to be careful here. I'm quite certain there was older birth mothers than what she was. But she's the oldest that we actually have an age given when her first child was born. Well, maybe she was the oldest that had first birth. I don't know that. She married either her uncle or her half-brother. She encouraged her husband to take another wife. She blamed him when this didn't go very good. Okay, a couple more. Was childless most of her life. And she laughed when God promised the impossible. So now we all know who we're talking about, right? Sarah. So I thought told you, was it December? I preached a message on Abraham. So I sort of decided that if God doesn't lay anything else on my heart, I'm going to sort of have a series at random, whatever, of what I'm going to call real people, real life, and real issues. And so Sarah was the logical next one for me. Real people, real life, and real issues. And the reason I do that is I think we know, at least for me, I know so much about some of these people. I've read their story, how many times, heard it preached on. But somehow, for me, sometimes I have a disconnect how real life was for these people, how they were flesh and blood like I am. So before we start digging, I'm just going to start in Genesis 11, if you want to open your Bibles. I'd like to give you the same timeline that I gave you on Abraham, more or less. Except they're going to put Sarah's name on it, so that some of the dates are a little different. And I do give credit to Usher and Philip Morrow for this. They've been accurate as far as I can find at the same time where I get something wrong or they're inaccurate. I hope you'll forgive us. So, this isn't going to be according to scale, but let's put creation here. So, from Adam, we'll make a line here. And we'll call this line Adam for his time, life. So the Bible tells us Adam lived 930 years. So from creation, I'm going to use what they call the An Hom way of figuring. So when the calendar we use is starts at Christ's birth and counts forward from there to our time, and from Christ's birth backwards to creation. So there's another An Hom is easier for me because it puts creation at zero, year zero, and then it counts up the whole way. So we would be in 6,000 something more or less today. So that puts creation at year zero. That means Adam, of course, was from creation to 930. Now, Adam was 687 when Methuselah was born. And like I said, this isn't necessarily going to be the scale. We'll try to keep it somewhat so. Let's see. So Methuselah is this line. And we know he lived 969 years. And then we'll put Shem. Shem overlapped with Methuselah roughly 98 years, according to the Bible. And he lived 600 years. So we'll put Shem's name on this one. Let's see. Now, if I counted this right, so the flood happened actually the year Methuselah died, more or less, from what we can tell. It's not saying he died in the flood, but that the flood was at that point, which would have made Shem a 98. So the flood was from creation, the flood was 1,656 years from creation to the flood. So now we come to Sarah. Sarah, incidentally, would have been born when Shem was, make sure I get this, 460. I'm going to put that in here. Oops, got that one way too long. Was initially Sarai, so I'm not sure if I'll get that said. But anyways, Shem would have been 640 when she was born, and she died at 127, which means that Shem outlived her by 13 years. So, yeah. Yeah, thank you. Got my numbers switched around, didn't I? Thanks. So 460 here instead of 460. 640. Okay, so I guess just technically this line should have been a little longer. Now, this board isn't long enough to do this. I would have liked to put the time of Christ on here yet. But Christ's birth, according to this calendar, would have been in 4,041. So if you do a little math there, Sarah, at least at her death, was closer to the time of Christ than she was to creation. So, I don't know. That's a little interesting time frame for you. A lot of times when we read the Bible, at least, you know, I look at the Bible here. So here's Genesis. So we hadn't got very far in time. And then I go through the Old Testament. I think we got a long ways. But the fact is that over half the Bible happened in the first 12 chapters of Genesis, more or less, time frame wise. So anyway, just some things to keep in mind. Okay, so Genesis chapter 11, I'm just probably for the most part going to read scripture, what scripture tells us about Sarah, and then come back and point out some things about her. So Genesis chapter 11, verse 28. And Haran died before his father, Terah, in the land of his nativity, in Ur of the Chaldees. Verse 29. And Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the wife of and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah. The daughter, some people would read that daughters of Haran, the father of Milcah and the father of Iscah, or possibly Sarah. Iscah possibly being a nickname for Sarah. Again, I can't prove that. But Sarah was barren and she had no child. And Terah took Abram his son and Lot the son of Haran his son's son and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan, and they came into Haran and dwelt there. And then the timeline. Okay, one thing I did want to point out, and I explained some of this, I don't know how much time to spend on it in the thing of Abram. I do know that in Genesis chapter 20, verse 12, Abraham calls Sarah his sister by the same dad, but not the same mother. Now, that word sister, translated, basically means they grew up in the same house. So that doesn't necessarily mean, and remember, Abraham was already fibbing, if you want to say it that way. He was already claiming she was his sister. And now, when he got caught, not his wife, and when he got caught that she was actually his wife, he comes back, well, we actually grew up in the same house, but she's not, basically he tries to explain it. So, I'm not trying to say that the Bible's necessarily wrong. I don't think that that verse in the context necessarily means they were actually half brother and half sister, because which to me makes a little bit more sense in some other things, but I'm not going to get real defensive about that. It's just something to think about. So that's sort of the basis that I come from. If you want more of a discussion on that, we can do that outside of this message, maybe. We do know also that Sarah was 10 years younger than Abram, so that's what I use to determine. We have Abram's age, and then Sarah, definitely in Genesis chapter 17, verse 17, it tells us that there was 10 years age difference. We do not know when they got married. If you're in Genesis 11 there, let's just go to verse 12. And we have, Arphaxad had lived Arphaxad had lived 530 years and begat Salah. So if we make him a pretty glaring exception, jump down to verse 14. And Salah lived 30 years and begat Eber, verse 16. And Eber lived 430 years and begat Peleg, verse 18. And Peleg lived 30 years and begat Reu, and then verse 20. And Reu lived 230 years and begat Serug. And verse 22, and Serug lived 30 years and begat Nahor. And verse 24, and Nahor lived 29 years and begat Terah. Then verse 26, and Terah lived 70 years and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. So if we make that Arphaxad and Terah the exception age, it seems like the average age for the fellow to get married would have been 31. Roughly. So just using that, I again can't prove this, just a thought. Say Abraham and Sarah would have got married at 31. Abraham being 31, that would have made Sarah 21. So somewhere between, So that roughly would have been 19 to 21 probably when she got married. Okay, so let's just look at the rest of the scripture account. Turn over to Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. Those of you not holding children and things, why don't you stand while we read this? The rest of you feel free to stay seated if you have a child or anything. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. Now the Lord said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house into a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation and will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curseth thee, and in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. And Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran, and they went forth to go into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. And Abraham passed through the land into the place of Sychem or Shechem, unto a plain of Moreh, and the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared unto Abraham and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. And he removed from thence into a mountain on the east of Bethel, and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west and Hai on the east. And there he builded an altar unto the Lord, and called on the name of the Lord. And Abraham journeyed, going on still toward the south. Going on to verse 19. And there was a famine in the land of Canaan, that would be. And Abraham went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. And it came to pass, when he was come near to enter into Egypt, that he said unto Sarai his wife, behold now, I know that thou art a fair woman to look upon. Therefore it shall come to pass that when the Egyptians shall see thee, that they shall say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will save thee alive. Say, I pray thee, thou art my sister, that it may be well with me for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of thee. And it came to pass that when Abraham was come into Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman, that she was very fair. The princes also of Pharaoh saw her and commended her before Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. Now, just one thing I want to point out. I know that up to this time, people had lived a long, long time. At the same time, remember, Sarah died at 127, so I don't know how all that transition worked. But at this point, she had to have been at least 65 years old. So she wasn't just a 20-year-old or something. I just thought it was interesting in the way it describes her. Okay, verse 16. And he entreated Abram well for her, Sarah's sake, and he had sheep and oxen, and he asses and men servants and maid servants, and she asses and camels. And the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarah, Abram's wife. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this that thou hast done unto me? Why didst thou not tell me that she was thy wife? Why saidst thou, she is my sister, so I might have taken her to me to wife? Now therefore, behold thy wife, take her and go thy way. Okay, let's turn over to chapter 16, Genesis chapter 16, verse 1 through 6. And I'm skipping some parts here. I'm aware of that. That explains some of this, but I trust you know it, and I'll explain some of it later. But basically going to read where it mentions Sarai. Chapter 16, verse 1. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children, and she had a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. And remember, as this account happens, it tells us roughly that Abraham was about 85 when this account happened, and roughly about 86 when Ishmael was born. So Sarah would have been around 75, 76. And Sarah said unto Abraham, behold now, the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. And Abraham hearkened unto the voice of Sarah. And Sarah, Abraham's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abraham had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife. And he went in under Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. And Sarai said unto Abraham, my wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom. And when she saw that thou had conceived, she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. But Abraham said unto Sarai, behold, thy maid is in thine hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee. And when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. Okay, chapter 17, verse 15. Genesis 17, 15. So here God and Abraham were in the midst of making a covenant, and it's very evident in the previous, I'll talk more about that. In 16, Sarah was struggling. She knew that a promise was given to Abraham, and it seems like she decided this promise did not include her. So she came up with some way that could go out around her then. Well, in 17, God brings us back to Sarah. chapter 17, verse 15. And God said unto Abraham, as for Sarah thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall her name be. And I will bless her, and give thee a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be of her. That's why her name was changed to Sarah, which means queen. Rather than being dominant or superior, it's now queen. When Abraham fell upon his face and laughed and said in his heart, shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old? And shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear? And Abraham said unto God, oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. And God said, Sarah thy wife shall bear thee a son indeed, and thou shalt call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his seed after him. You can be seated for the rest. Chapter 18. Verse 1 through 15. Chapter 18, verse 1. And the Lord appeared unto him, Abraham, in the plains of Mamre, as he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day. And he lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door and bowed himself toward the ground. And he said, my Lord, if now I have found favor in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee, from thy servant. Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, and wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will fetch a morsel of bread, and comfort ye your hearts. After that ye shall pass on, for therefore are ye come to your servant. And they said unto him, so do as thou hast said. And Abraham hasted into the tent unto Sarah, and said, make ready quickly 3 measures of fine meal. Knead it, and make cakes upon the hearth. And Abraham ran out of the herd and fetched a calf, tender and good, and gave it unto a young man, and he hasted to dress it. And he took butter and milk and the calf which he had dressed and set it before them, and he stood by under the tree, and they did eat. And they said unto him, where is Sarah thy wife? And he said, behold, in the tent. And he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent door which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in age, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, After I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord, being old as also? And the Lord said unto Abraham, wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I have certainly bear a child, which I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the time appointed, I will return unto thee according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. Then Sarah denied, saying, I laugh not. For she was afraid and said, But he said, thou didst laugh. Okay, I don't know. Time keeps moving on. In chapter 20, we sort of have a repeat of Genesis chapter 20. We have a repeat of Egypt, if you will, where Abraham goes down to the Philistines. And he's scared, so he tells Sarah, say, you're my sister. And that's where we have that verse I mentioned. And so Abimelech took her to his house, I guess with the intent of having her as a wife. But then God revealed the truth to him and all that. So we'll skip that one. But I'm not quite sure, is this all in chronological order or not? It seems a little strange that chapter 20 is between the time that the promise was given, and then Isaac was born a year later, but maybe things happened fast there for a couple months, I don't know. So, but anyway, chapter 20 is in there, so I'll give recognition to it and move on to chapter 21, verse 1. Excuse me. Genesis chapter 21, verse 1. And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old, as the Lord commanded him. And Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him. And Sarah said, God hath made me laugh, so that all that hear me will laugh with me. And she said, who would have said unto Abraham that Sarah should have given children suck, for as I have borne him a son in his old age. And the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned. And when Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking, therefore she said unto Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son. And God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad, because of thy bondwoman, in all that Sarah hath said unto thee, hearken unto her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Excuse me. And then the last one, let's see here. Genesis chapter 23, verse 1 and 2, and then 19. Just again, Ishmael would have been around 14 when Isaac was born, with Abraham being 86 at his birth and 100 at Isaac's birth. And the other thing is, I want to point out, this is about Sarah's death. So Isaac would have been 37 when Sarah passed away, according to what the Bible gives us here. So Genesis chapter 23, verse 1 and 2. And Sarah was 107 and 20 years old, and these were the years of the life of Sarah. And Sarah died in Kirjath Arba, the same as Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. Verse 19. And after this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, the same as Hebron in the land of Canaan. So that's the life story of Sarah. Now, I'd like to point out, like I said, we're talking about real people, real life, real issues. So rather than read all this, I thought I'd just read it and then go back in our memories. I'd point out a couple struggles that Sarah had. I'd say the first one that I really noted was waiting on God. Just waiting on God. You know, she saw the promise that God had given, and she saw how, as time went on, this thing became more and more impossible. If they married at the age I suggested, they probably were married 55 years, you know, before that Hagar incident. And, you know, just 55 years, God, does it take that long? Surely. And so finally, she just took herself out of the picture. There has to be some other way to accomplish. So it wasn't really a waiting on God. Another struggle I see it, I guess I'm somewhat guessing at this one, but is appreciating what she had. And her longing for a son, and like I said earlier, this wasn't her dream life. Most women, at least as I read the Old Testament, seem like their whole goal, their whole drive, their almost their passion or what gave them value was to have children. And here she had none. No children. And in that, I think she forgot to appreciate the husband that she had. Because it's evident that Abraham had no other children up to this point until she suggested this way around it. So he was faithful to her. And she probably had a marriage that was exceptional for her time and place because of the way they operated. And yet, she didn't really appreciate it till her advice took that away from her, did she? I don't know. It looks to me like that was part of the issue later on. Maybe I'm wrong. Third struggle she seems to have had is accepting responsibility for a mistake. She gave bad advice. Just clear and simple. It wasn't patient, and I don't blame her for not being patient, but she decided they could do like other people, and I'll talk about that. But just finally, it's interesting. While I think there was a good thing in what she said about there about Abraham, this is your problem now, for listening to me, at the same time, she could have said, I made a mistake, Abraham, even though you have to fix it. I messed up in giving you that advice. But anyway, then the fourth struggle. And I don't know that we should really blame her for this one, but like I said, she sort of brought it on herself, and that's the thing of jealousy. With the way she treated Hagar after, she came up with this idea and got them into it, and then when Hagar had a bad attitude because she thought, well, it's clearly Sarah's fault that there's no children in this family, then Sarah's like, we got a problem, and I think jealousy and all that got wrapped up, and she didn't treat Hagar nice. Was it Hagar's fault? Hagar probably had no choice in the thing. Now, she did have a choice about her attitude. And then furthermore, when that episode there after Isaac was weaned in that feast, I don't know what all went on. Just says that Ishmael was mocking. What that means, I don't know. It does seem God backed her up, that Ishmael was not supposed to live in the same place and be an heir with Isaac in that way. At the same time, I would suggest her attitude was, you know, my son can't be an heir with that bond woman's son. Get rid of him. Just the attitude seems to me an attitude in there. Again, I have to read between the lines on some of that. So I'm talking about real people, real life, real issues. Now, that said, I'm not trying to be all negative. I think she came through right. And I think that's sometimes where we fail in as we share together on these examples, we forget. We almost hesitate to talk or point out where they struggled. So let's own a struggle. Yet let's also go on that in this struggle, she had some very commendable traits that I want to look at. I think I have three on that one. The first one is she allowed her husband or her authority to own the problem. So she went to Abraham and she would share her thought or idea. When this child was just not forthcoming, she went to Abraham and she shared her idea of how they could work around this. Now, maybe it wasn't a good idea, but she still did the right thing in sharing her idea with her husband. And she also left him work it out and implement it. You know, in the case of having Hagar as a proxy wife to have a proxy child instead of. And just notice, I'll just read Genesis 16:5 again. Listen to it. And Sarah said unto Abram, my wrong be upon thee. Okay, so she, to some degree, she said, I made a mistake, but it's be upon thee. I've given my maid into. She saw that she had conceived. I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judged between me and thee. So the good thing she did was she admitted her mistake. And yet she allowed or waited on Abraham to own the problem. Now, I don't really think he owned the problem like he should have. Evidently, he just said, oh, well, she's your maid. Do whatever you want to. And then Sarah wasn't very kind, evidently, at least bad enough that this girl ran off. At the same time, she did do those things right. Also, in the case of Ishmael and Hagar being sent away, I think she had some commendable traits there as well. She identified a problem. She shared the issue, the problem with her husband. And even the Bible indicates that Abraham would have very much did not want to deal that way with it. So he probably would have rather just brushed this whole thing under the rug and kept going. But God, through Sarah, pointed out the problem to him and then told Abraham, listen to her, take care of the problem. It's your deal. And it was Abraham that sent them off. You know, often whether it's wives or whether it's some other people and under authority of some way, we often see a problem. Maybe especially if we're part of it like Sarah was in this case. We see this problem and we feel maybe partly at fault, partly the cause of it. And so therefore, our brain starts working and we soon begin legitimizing taking authority on ourselves that doesn't belong to us to try to correct the problem that we were partly the cause of, with the effect that we make the problem much worse than if we would just say, here's what it is, and allow those in authority to resolve it. You know, when Abraham had the daffy idea, I guess I'll call it, of denying their husband and wife relationship in Egypt and then with Abimelech, she supported his leading. Think about that. She could have blown that thing sky high just by saying who she actually was, or yeah, their closest, but she didn't. She went along with him. And maybe to us under the new covenant, I think lying like that would be stretching a point. Don't get me wrong. Yet, it's interesting to me that in both cases where she submitted and followed along with Abraham's wrongness, if you will, God actually resolved the issue. And I think God blessed her submission, and I'll read some New Testament verses on that in a minute. God actually seems to have rewarded and blessed her for going along with Abraham, even where he was off his rocker, if you want to say it that way. Okay, the second thing that I want to commend or learn from in Sarah's life is Sarai longed to see the promise made to her husband fulfilled. She wanted that promise fulfilled, and that's what led to a lot of their problems that we have recorded here, was her longing to have this promise made to Abraham to fulfilled, that Abraham would have this son. Yet in that longing, she struggled to understand and have faith. She knew that God had promised Abraham a son, and yet 55 years on, it was not working out. It was not happening. Still no child. You know, I know one couple far from here who were married a year, and they desperately wanted children, and they sort of panicked. Can you imagine 55 years? What kind of panic should you have by then? Genesis chapter 15, verse 4, in that verse it would say, she was, after all, by now 75, and it seems she just lost hope that the promise to her husband of a son included her as his wife. So she quite, and again, I know this is different for our thinking, but for her, a very logical step, decided that there must be some other way to accomplish this. And not having all the questionable medical knowledge and technology we have today, the way open to them to accomplish was this, through what I call a proxy wife, to have a proxy child. Somebody do it instead of. That was the solution of her time and era. Rather than just saying, God can do this somehow, I have to find a way. And I think we do that the same way so often and through medical things and things today. And I don't know that it's all good. You know what's interesting is after they tried their own way and this thing was not going so good, in Genesis chapter 17, verse 15, we have God coming back on the picture, renewing his covenant with Abraham, and then specifically saying that Sarah will be this son's mother. In fact, he changes her name, like I mentioned already, from superior or dominant to a queen or head person, head of a line. And I've wondered, was God making some statement, sort of subtle statement to Sarah about that? I don't know, but think about it. So you have a name, and so you begin to try to figure out how to help God with this. That's sort of the characteristics of a superior or dominant person, isn't it? And so you figure out this way, and this way falls apart on you. Then God comes around and says, hey, well, look, I'm going to change your name now. So your name's now Sarah, which means that you will be the mother of this lineage. And I can imagine how she struggled there in Genesis 18, 9 through 16, which I read. You know, as the Bible especially tells us that she had now entered the time of life where, physically speaking, it was impossible for her to mother a child. That time was past and she knew it. And yet she hears this promise repeated to Abraham, and then it must be a fairly short time later, according to the time frame we have, by these men, which Abraham seems to have known who the one was. I don't know how much Sarah knew at that point. But that this will happen. And yet this time of life is past. And yet it wasn't past, because she saw the promise fulfilled and became a mother for the first time at 90 years old. There in Genesis chapter 21, verse 1 through 7. And I love Hebrews 11:11. It says an interesting thought. So for all Sarah's laughing, for her denying and all that struggle, I guess she came through in faith. Because listen to this, Hebrews 11, verse 11. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Wow, what a statement. You know, if we wouldn't have Genesis telling us about the work up to that point, it would look, wouldn't we sort of say, oh, well, she was just a strong person, right? No, she wasn't. She wasn't strong at all. In fact, I think she reminds me a little of myself. You know, sometimes I've noticed this often. I think the fellows that work with me probably see it too. So maybe one of them will want to offer something. And they'll say, hey, about off, how about having off this week or whatever? And I'll think about it. And right at first, it looks impossible. I just, no, it don't work. And then as I think about it more, yeah, we can call this person or that person and shove this around and do that. It'll work. And so you reach a place of working through it. And for me, that takes time. And I believe Sarah was the same way. Because Hebrews 11, let me just read that again. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. That doesn't sound like the woman laughing in the tent, does it? Yet at the same time, the woman laughing in the tent became the woman of Hebrews 11:11. And to me, that's precious that I can work that direction as well. Okay, the third and last thing I'd like to point out about Sarai is she stayed with, supporting, and submitting to her husband in the difficulties of his life and calling, and even in the less than wise ideas he had, which I pointed out somewhat already. I don't know. I haven't been able to sit down and interview people from that era. But I would say today, probably, on average, most women prize security and normalcy a bit more than men. Would you say that's right? For at least some of us men, I'm not going to say absolutely across the board, but some of us, yeah, it looks daunting to be a pioneer of some sort or to make a radical change. But sooner or later, we shift into a mode where it has to be done. So, and as we scroll along, if we let ourselves, we can actually sort of start enjoying this challenge. You know, can I make this work? How's this going to work? Whereas for women, the guy think God created them, at least to some extent that way, is they prize their security. They prize knowing what's, and so got this wild husband running off all over, whatever, you know. And think about Sarah. I'd like for you to consider this about Sarah. She left what was known and established and safe multiple times. So moving from Ur to Haran was probably a major move. They never went back to visit, I doubt. I don't know, I guess. I mean, they did. Amazing how some of those people traveled. That's a long ways. And then from Haran, they go to Canaan, to another town? No. To nomads. A nomadic lifestyle. So they go from Canaan, from Haran to Canaan, from Canaan, multiple places in Canaan, to Egypt, from Egypt back to Canaan, multiple places in Canaan again. And all this happened within a fairly short time period, a couple years likely, that they at least started this process. And think about this. In the first two of these moves, she left the areas of established town and house, what I'm going to call house culture. So we have what I call a house culture, right? You live in a certain place under a certain roof, and when you go home, you know where home is. It didn't move while you were away. So that's how she likely grew up, or at least the area she was in would have been that way, in Ur, and then even in Haran was more that way, maybe not quite as much. But now they go to Canaan, and now they live in a tent, a movable house that can move around. And this all to follow a promise, to follow a command that's given to her husband. I don't know, maybe some of your wives, maybe my wife as much as anyone, has been asked to put up with some pretty strange things already. But how about it, ladies? You want to go live in a tent and nomad around? That would be something else. Pack up in a caravan, go over here, go back there. You know, Father, this wasn't under necessarily a good time to be doing this. This was under uncertain and precarious existence. You know, while Abraham and company, he seemed to have a pretty good supply of servants, were able to hold their own with the smaller groups around them. In fact, we have the story of how he went and attacked that king that had carried away a number of cities. Abraham, for whatever reason, had a real fear of the larger kingdoms they related to, such as Egypt and the Philistines, and mainly as it regarded his wife. And thinking about this, I don't know how, I think I haven't been put to the test like Abraham was, thankfully. I think my wife would like for me if I'd be the opposite. But Abraham was more willing to lose his wife than he was to lose his life. Did you think about that? And I think my wife would prefer if that was switched around. But Sarah followed his directions even when it would look like following his directions would upend her life. She had no way of knowing, I don't think. Maybe she prayed. I hope she did. That she was going to come back out of those king's courts. I mean, these were guys that collected who knows how many and kept them here, sort of in storage, whatever. And what a mess. Yet, she followed through. And before you judge her too hard, let me read a verse here I'm coming up to. And then one last thing I want to point out before I get to the last part is Sarah was a quiet helper. Think about when Abraham was sitting in the door of his tent and he sees these three men coming. He runs out, invites them in. I have figured, and I don't say this, my wife is very gracious, but I have still found out with all her graciousness that one of the nastiest things you can do to your wife is just drop in with a bunch of company, right, when they have no clue. Well, here come these fellows walking down the road. Abraham runs out and invites them in. And the next thing you know, he comes bursting into Sarah's tent. And did you notice that? He says, quickly, come on, fast now, make some cakes. You know, these fellows are hungry. Get this done. I don't want to point that at you ladies necessarily, though I guess that is fairly direct. How do you respond if your husband does that to you? What are you going to do? You have a Sarah response. And you know what's interesting is she evidently didn't raise a row and be fussing and fuming and doing whatever she could, clattering around to show her attitude about it. Because as they were eating then, it says the men asked, you know, where is your wife, Sarah? And she was in the tent in the background, willing to stay there, seemingly. Okay, as Abraham is called the father of the faithful, so Sarah is called the mother of submissive and supportive godly women. 1 Peter 3, verse 5 and 6. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well, are not afraid with any amazement. So may we all be daughters and also sons of Sarah. Can we stand for prayer?